This program was first broadcast on Canterbury's community access radio station Plains FM 96.9 and was made with the assistance of New Zealand On Air.
One of New Zealand's foremost researchers, Professor David Ferguson, died last week. New Zealand is deeply indebted to him for all the work he's done in the field of psychology. To honour him, we've decided to replay this interview, which was made in 2016, in this special edition of Lighthouse of Hope.
When the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you home with my lighthouse. Oh, whoa, oh, whoa, I'll guide you home with my
Welcome to episode 4 of Lighthouse of Hope. I'm your host, Michael Hempseed. Today's topic is quite a difficult topic. It's moving forward from the earthquakes. Before we get to that, I want to try and lighten the mood with my opening monologue. I was going to do a segment on this show called That's the Trouble with This Country. Instead, I decided to call it That's the Trouble with Australia. Taylor Swift has a bad habit of writing songs about her ex-lovers. For example, Dear John was written about John Mayer, Out of the Woods and Style were written about Harry Styles from One Direction, We're Never Ever Getting Back Together was written about Joe Jonas, and Bad Blood was written about Katy Perry. She's been going out with Calvin Harris for quite a long time now, and it was announced at the start of the year they might be getting engaged. Harris won't be asking for a prenuptial agreement, he'll be asking for a pre-song agreement. Google announced today that they will be changing their unofficial slogan from Don't Be Evil to Don't Use Microsoft. And finally, next week, it's the Oscars. As you'll probably know, there's been a great deal of controversy about the Oscars this year. No black filmmakers were nominated. Therefore, actors like Will Smith and the director Spike Lee have decided to boycott the Oscars. Matter of fact, this happened about 5 years ago when none of the Smurfs were nominated. All the blue people boycotted the Oscars as well. The Academy is now not sure what to do. They are wondering, well, should they go back and nominate some filmmakers that have darker skin? However, then people might say, well, they were only nominated for their skin colour and not their acting ability. However, I think the Academy has come up with a solution that will work. Their plan is to ask Kanye West to give out the awards to whoever he thinks deserves them. Today's topic is all about the earthquakes. And to be honest, I've found this topic harder to prepare for than all the other ones put together. And I think one of the reasons is, obviously, the city has been through so much. There's a huge amount of emotion and trauma that people are experiencing, and I want to be incredibly sensitive to that. However, this show is called Lighthouse of Hope, and I strongly believe the most important thing that you can give anyone that's been through a difficult situation is hope. Some people believe that giving someone hope means saying that everything will be okay and one day there won't be any more trouble in the future. As nice as that is not hope. Unless you have a crystal ball that is 100% accurate, you can't say that to someone. And that's very unfair to say that to someone because you don't know that things will get better. Hope is different from that. Hope says that there is the possibility that things can get better. And hope can even say that right now, everything is terrible and everything has gone wrong. But in the future, there is the possibility that things will change. I'll talk more about hope in a minute. And later I'll be joined by Professor David Ferguson, who has conducted some very interesting research about the effects of the earthquakes on the people of Christchurch. Before then, there are a couple of points that I want to clarify about the exact effects of the earthquake. So much of what has been presented in the media tends to show that everyone in Christchurch will have been deeply traumatised by the quakes. However, that is not the case. There are several things that are very important to know. The first thing is that not everyone has been negatively affected by the quake, and Professor Ferguson will talk more about that a little later on. Researchers have found that moderate but prolonged stress is far more damaging than a few sudden impacts. So I'll explain that. Chances are, if there was just one earthquake and then tomorrow everything was back to normal, most people would cope remarkably well with that. However, what seems to have done a lot of the damage is ongoing difficulties and struggles. And again, Professor Ferguson will talk about that a little later. The next bit that I'm going to say is not based on scientific research, but this is just something that I've observed. There's an effect in psychology called secondary trauma. Many people will assume that those most affected by the earthquakes in Christchurch will be the ones that either had significant distress or injury during the earthquakes, and that could be they lost a house, they were severely injured, or they even lost a loved one. And certainly some of those people will be affected. However, it's also possible that another group of people will be affected by it, and these are the group of people that might not have had a lot to do with the earthquake. With secondary trauma, it's always been assumed that if, say, there was a brother and a sister, and the sister was abused, that the sister would be the one that would be most affected by it. However, research is starting to come out that may say the brother may actually be more affected by it than the sister. And it's thought one of the reasons for this could be that if it happens to the sister, that she may be able to understand that, she may be able to process that, and she may be able to move forward. If the brother was aware of that and was helpless, that can be a lot harder to process. Secondly, if that was discovered, there's a high chance that a lot of help and support would have gone to the sister, but they might not have helped the brother. In my role as a youth worker, one of the things that I observed was people from, say, Australia starting to have what seemed to be earthquake trauma, even though they were nowhere near the earthquakes when it happened. Now, first of all, this is a small group, and this is not based on any scientific study, but it did seem like people that were completely removed from the earthquake, that had moved over here, seemed to have earthquake trauma. And it's possible that if they weren't in the situation, they've struggled to cope with that more than someone that was. So it's very important to be aware that there is a multitude of issues. Some people that were very close to it may not have been affected by it at all, and other people that may have been distant from it could have been affected a lot more than them. Those were just a couple of points that I wanted to clarify, because I feel like they haven't been covered very well up until now. The big question with the earthquakes, and a lot of people are asking, is when will things be back to normal? And this might be very difficult for you to hear, but things will never be back to normal, and they will never be the same again. And when some people hear that, they might become very distressed, and it might be very hard for them to hear. However, I want to take a moment to consider this, and to consider a way that you might be able to move forward. Some people assume that if someone experiences trauma, that's going to result in a ruined life and an inability to move forward. However, I don't believe that is the case. In my work, I've worked with hundreds of people that have experienced with significant trauma, and certainly some of them have ended up in rehabs and some of them have ended up in very bad situations indeed. But the interesting thing is, the overwhelming majority of people that experience trauma can actually move forward in a positive way. I've met some incredibly happy people in my life, and when you meet them, they just radiate happiness, and there's this incredible joy about them. And with some of these people, when I've got to know them at a deeper level, I've realised that they've had a very difficult life, and that things might not have gone so well for them at all. And this can be extremely surprising to realise that people have had such difficulties and such struggles can actually move forward in a positive way. And the big question is, how do you do that? And I realise it's easy to sit here and talk about this, it's much harder to do in real life. But here's one example. About a year and a half ago, I had the privilege of going to Cambodia. It's one of the most remarkable and intriguing countries that I have ever been to. If you ever have the chance to visit there, I highly recommend it. The guide that I had didn't have perfect English, so I hope this translation is correct. Over there, there is a man who runs a landmine museum. During the war, he planted landmines. Now, he doesn't know what happened to those landmines, but there's a high chance they killed a lot of people or maimed them and took limbs off them. So here was someone that did something that was terrible. There was a huge amount of guilt that he experienced, huge amount of trauma, and the big question was, how could someone have done something so terrible and move forward? However, this man now runs a landmine museum. He uses all the profits of it to help victims of landmines. Not only that, he spends a lot of his time educating people in poor villages about landmines. Unfortunately, what would often happen is villagers with little education might find metal objects in the ground, and they would realise that they're metal, they would think they're valuable, and so they would touch them. Of course, unfortunately, they would explode often. So he spends a lot of his time educating people about the dangers of landmines, and he's had a huge impact on a number of people. Yes, he did something very wrong, but he was able to find a positive way to move forward. And I think that's one of the things that people have to do. Yes, people need to acknowledge what's happened. It can be very, very difficult. But people need to find some way to use what's happened to move forward in a positive way. I'll give you just a couple more examples of this. Most of you will probably know about Louise Nicholas. She suffered horrific childhood sexual abuse. Today, she helps other victims of rape and sexual assault to have a voice, to be heard, and to heal. So even if you have gone through a lot of trauma, even if things haven't gone well up until now, I believe everyone can find some positive way to use that and make it and move forward. Now, just to be clear, I'm not saying what happened was good. Sometimes people take this too far and say that was a positive experience and you needed that to grow. I don't believe that at all. What happened was dreadful, it was terrible. There were no positives in and of that. However, some positives can come out from moving forward if you look for it. Joining us today, we have Professor David Ferguson. He has conducted over 400 scientific studies, resulting in 400 published papers. It's a pleasure to have you with us today.
Yes. Thank you, Michael.
So first of all, can you tell us about this amazing body of research that you've done, the study from the Christchurch Medical School?
Well, it's been a longitudinal study, which was actually set up in 1977, by Professor Fred Shannon, who was the Foundation Professor of Paediatrics. By a long process, well, a fairly long process, he decided to set up a research project, and I was appointed in 1976 to run this study, which at that time was called the Christchurch Child Development Study. And we began in 1976 by recruiting all children born over a four-month period in the Christchurch urban region. There were 1,265 of these children, and we have progressively followed them through from birth up to the age of 35, looking at various developmental issues relating to their health and generally to their health and well-being.
That's fantastic. And for our listeners that don't know, this isn't just great research for New Zealand, this is world-class research.
We have been generally quite well recognised, and I think one of the useful indices that we've got now today with computing systems is the number of times the research has been cited. And as of this morning, I happened to check it, the study's been cited nearly 24,000 times by various researchers.
That's extraordinary. So Professor Ferguson has given New Zealand a lasting body of research that will make a huge difference for many years to come.
Well, I hope so.
And in your time with the research, what have been some of the highlights for you or some of the interesting findings that you've discovered?
There's a whole series of highlights for me. I think one of the most important studies I did, because it taught me a lot about how to analyse the evidence, was a study in the early 1980s on the effects of cigarette smoking during early childhood and respiratory illness. And essentially what we showed in that study is that children whose parents smoked had about double the rate of lower respiratory illness, that's bronchitis and pneumonia, during their first years of life. And that study, of course, played quite an influential role in the whole history of debate about it, you know, protecting children from smoking. And indeed, you can still see that debate happening about protecting children in cars from smoking, even up into the 21st century.
And to our listeners today, this might seem quite obvious, but back then it wasn't so well known, was it?
No, it was quite it was quite surprising, and there was quite substantial dispute over it. And the Christchurch study just happened to be conducted at the right time for us to do probably what was the first and most comprehensive analysis of this issue.
Which is fantastic.
Which is quite substantial.
It is. And sometimes people think that research is boring and it doesn't have an impact, but as you've just shown us, this is very practical and has a huge impact on so many people around the world.
Mm-hmm.
And then you also look at mental health studies, and the reason we asked you to come on the show today was to talk about the impact of the Christchurch earthquake.
Yes, sure.
And can you tell us about the findings in, say, the first year and the second year? What impact did this have on people's general
well-being?
Well,
the most important thing we found when we began to study earthquakes was it wasn't simply being in Christchurch that mattered. The most important thing was essentially the family's or the individual's exposure to both the what we call shaking and breaking effects of an earthquake and also the disruption to their life course. Although people talk about Christchurch as though it's a sort of big community all facing a common disaster, that's not the case. Quite a lot of people escape with virtually no disruption to their lives, and at the other extreme, there was about a quarter of Christchurch's population, mainly in the eastern suburbs, with quite heavy exposure. What we found when we looked at the spectrum of exposure to the earthquake was there were small to moderate increases in rates of a number of common mental disorders, including depression, post-traumatic stress disorder, interestingly, nicotine dependence, but not alcohol dependence, and related outcomes. Essentially, when we looked at it, we think that the Christchurch earthquakes led to about a 10% increase in the overall rate of illness, mental illness, in the CHDS cohort. And the interesting thing when you listen to the radio debate is that debates swing from side to side, where the earthquake has caused terrible damage to people's mental health, where others doubt it. It has caused any effect at all. Our results provide a much more, I think, moderate and I hope reasoned view that this was a traumatic event. It did have adverse effects, but they were not overwhelming on the mental health of the community. We did other studies, and which is a very interesting study. After the mental health study, we said to people, well, you've been through these events. What were the negatives and what were the positives? And of course, people told us about the negatives of the stress, and particularly things like the disruption of work and damage to housing seemed to be major traumas because they were going on and on and on. But they also mentioned quite a few positive things. They said that it brought people together. It made people appreciate them appreciate things and so forth. So the earthquake was not an unalloyed disaster. And you can see about the markers of the way the community came together, and particularly with the student groups who got together and really contributed substantially to helping. In my neighbourhood, all the neighbours got together and were much more friendly and supportive than they had been before the earthquake. So the earthquake was not an unmitigated disaster. I'm not saying it was a good thing, but it did have some positive consequences for people's sense of well-being, citizenship, and related issues. And I suspect that that may well have mitigated some of the mental health problem issues.
Certainly, and a lot of our listeners will be familiar with post-traumatic stress, but there's also post-traumatic growth, and you've just said that actually for some people this can be an experience that can help them to grow.
That's right, that is exactly what many people said.
And are there any other specific examples of things that people could do if, say, they are struggling, if 5 years on they're really having a difficult time, that they can do that can improve their mental health?
Well, the advice always is to go and see their general practitioner and get a referral to a psychiatrist if the problems are large. And I think that is sensible advice. But I think the other things to do is to really sit back and look at what really happened in terms of the progress of Canterbury and the positives. I mean, although Christchurch is still in a state of rebuilding, there have actually been large amounts of capital brought into the economy, and quite a lot of positive events have occurred. And I think looking at the positives as well as the negatives, I think may help some people get these issues in perspective. I suspect that we're going to do another study next year, we hope. I suspect the major thing that people will tell us is that the real problems have been issues of housing and resolving debates with the EQC and insurance companies and getting all of those issues done. My experience seems to be that that is really the major conversation in Christchurch about the earthquakes at the moment.
Very much so. And are there any risk factors that you think people should be particularly aware of that for, say, a certain group of people are more at risk than others?
Well, we did a very interesting... When we did the study asking people what was upset them, and it got the big list about housing and jobs, one thing came out very clearly, that women reported quite substantially greater distress than men. Now, this may sound politically incorrect, but it seems to tie up with quite a lot of literature, which suggests that when faced with stress, there is a greater response for women to react than men. And we've published this. I'm certain some people may see it as sexist or male chauvinist, but the result came out very consistently across a lot of measures. And so recognising that there are gender differences in responsibility to stress, and that women may find these problems greater than men, I think is important.
And we're almost out of time, but one of the things I did want to discuss was, is something like depression or anxiety something that someone will be stuck with for life, or has your research shown that people can recover from this?
The research evidence, I think, says that certainly if you develop anxiety and depression early in life, it tends to perseverate and carry on. But, excuse me again, but it does not continue for everybody. So a lot of about 50% of people who get depressed once never get depressed again. But then there is a population of about 10% of people who are recurrently depressive, and it seems to hang on over the course of their life. So it's quite a complicated issue. It's not a simple, if you're depressed, you'll always be depressed. Some people do show a perseveration of depression, whereas others don't.
There's the possibility that people can recover?
Yes. Recovery is more likely, I think, than continued depression.
And certainly in the work that I've done with young people, just telling them that that's a possibility often helps them get better?
Well, certainly. I think with young people, most young people who get depressed will not be exhibiting depression in their 30s. That's what our study would suggest.
Yeah. And it amazes me the number of young people that I meet that don't know this, that worry that if they develop this, say, 15, 16, that it will go on forever.
Well, in some ways, I think a sort of analogy that might be helpful is it may be a bit like sunburn. There are people who are prone to sunburn, but because you've got sunburn once doesn't mean you're going to get sunburned again.
So we're out of time now. So Professor Ferguson, thank you very much for your time this morning. And I just want to say thank you on behalf of New Zealand, because this has been an incredible body of research that you've done that will benefit our country for years to come in the future.
Well, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you for listening. If you do need help, you might have heard in the media that all the funding for post-earthquake counselling has dried up and there's no more. That's not the case. There's still lots of places that are offering free counselling. If you go to rebuildchristchurch.co.nz, that's rebuildchristchurch.co.nz, there's some great information on there. Also, if you just Google Christchurch earthquake counselling, a lot of good results come up. To close with today, we have Switchfoot, Dare You to Move.
Welcome to the planet. Welcome to existence. Everyone's here. Everyone's here. Everybody's watching you now. Everybody
when the nights get cold and the lights go out, the sun is gone behind the clouds, and you feel lost, and I'll reach out to guide you